You are listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey kids,
look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance off, bro, me and you.
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gilpin.
I'm Adam Bishop.
I'm Chris Ellis.
I'm the Hey Kids Comics Desperado.
I'm Batman.
Who's a villain in Captain Canuck?
What does he do?
Taking our maple syrup, eh?
I'm gonna chuck my hockey puck in my beer bottle at you. Take off, you hoser.
Gwenpool. I mean, Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff. This is gonna be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
When you're trying to come up with an offensive movie that you want to reclaim, it's time to segue into the next porn comic segment, Adam.
How can you not have seen Airplane? What are you guys, young?
I talked to him directly, so I got a mass order. So I have like a good 5-inch stack inside my comic box.
Right on.
That's below average.
Halt! Smash!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show. I'm one of your hosts, Martin Bruda, and with me today are
Chris Ellis,
Martin Peterson,
Chris Gilpin.
Hey, fellas.
How's it going?
What's up? Are we having fun?
Yeah, for the most part.
Oh, tons.
Everybody had good holiday.
Yeah, it was all
Christmas
right.
Holiday.
Nothing to write home about.
Yeah, my extended quiet. Holidays, I was stuck with my kids, so would have been nicer if they're at school. But
exactly, yeah. New Year's Eve, everybody was in bed by 10,
like 11:01 or 12:01. Like, ding, midnight. Good night, everybody. I'm going to bed.
I'm out.
Peace out. I'm going to bed.
That's awesome.
Sounds about right.
Well, today's topic of conversation is Star Wars. Mm-hmm. With all the new Star Wars in the media and films and TV shows and Disney just spoiling the snot out of us with episodes and stuff, I thought we'd chat about Star
Wars. Yeah. I love Star Wars.
Now, I'm going to start first because I'm the elder statesman. I actually saw Star Wars the first time in the movie theater in 1977. When I was 8, you can do some math there if you feel like
I wasn't born yet.
Not me neither.
And it was really cool because I guess at some point in time we had some sort of a conversation or something, or one of my cousins mentioned something or whatever, and my mom decided to take me to see this new fangled movie that everybody was talking about, but left it as a surprise.
Oh, nice.
So we hopped in the car, we're going for a ride, whatever, you know, I'm not paying too much attention. Dad pulled over on George Street. We hopped out of the car and went into the movie theater. And I have no idea what we're doing there. We're going to go see a movie. Okay. Sit down and then the crawl. Right. Okay. Great. Fine.
Yeah.
Then the destroyer. And that was it. Yeah. I was done. I can't tell you whether I had popcorn. I can't tell you whether my dad came in after he parked the car or whether he went home. I can't tell you anything. All I can tell you is absolutely every detail about that film.
Yeah.
That film blew my 8-year-old mind.
Yeah.
I got home immediately. My superhero action figures under the bed. My Hot Wheels dinky cars under the bed. And it's like, bring it on. I want Star Wars action figures. I want Star Wars bed sheets. I want Star Wars curtains. I want Star Wars coloring books. I want Star Wars.
So this is your fault then.
Oh, it was huge. It was such an impact. Like, I mean, we're talking action, we're talking adventure, you know, I'm into the comic book stuff thing. And we got all these really cool comic book like characters, like all the aliens and the robots and stuff. And it's just fired on all cylinders. It just completely unexpected and blew my little 8-year-old.
Yeah.
It just started an eternal love affair with the movie and everything. And like I said, everything, birthday wish list, Christmas wish list, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars.
Nice.
I do remember begging my mom once. We were in a Shopper's Drug Mart, and they had, you know how they sometimes have little toys along the aisle here in spots? They had a row of Obi-Wan Kenobis, and I'm just like begging, Mom, please, please, please have a Ben Kenobi. That was my first Star Wars action figure.
Oh, nice.
That was fun. It was good.
So I bought two and kept one in the package.
Shut up. Gosh. Yeah. Don't even joke. Like, I'm the kid that clipped out all the proof of purchases and mailed them in to get a Boba Fett action figure. I milled in proof of purchases to get the weapons accessory pack. You know, I in the store, I'm ripping the package open, and, you know, security guard's like, "What?" I'm like, "Ooh, pew, 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 pew." And mom's holding the card to go pay.
As a dick. And you probably don't have any of those now, do you?
I actually still have. I don't know 100% where. I think it might be in my desk at work, but I still have my original Boba Fett.
There you go.
3/4 wow. proof action figure. I do have, like, since bought, you know, a couple of times over, I have recollected almost the entire 3/3 set. Almost. There's a couple of harder ones. Like, once you get into the being 12, 13, 14 years old, you kind of drop off. So there's a few of the Return of the Jedi figures that was just like, yeah. But Star Wars and Empire, I had almost all the figures.
Mm-hmm. It was pretty good. I did a Katoy comic show one time, and the guy across from me had a, I'd never seen one before. It was like a toy transporter, Star Wars transporter, like the round or the ovals, and it was open and full of figures.
Was it like a white and black UFO?
I remember being white. I don't know.
Yeah, like the outside shell was white, the inside was black.
Yeah, that could be.
That was actually a Sears non-Star Wars knockoff action figure carrying case in the shape of a UFO. So you could actually put your figures in it, close the lid, and use it as a big, huge Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was that. I don't think it was that. I think it was an actual Star Wars ship, but one I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen any round ones, but maybe that's one of the newer things.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, after that, like, I'm not sure if did you guys obviously didn't get hit by that initial Star Wars mania, but then came, of course, the Marvel Comics Star Wars comics to give us further adventures.
And that's I have one of the Whitman of those.
Yeah, and that's one of the few Marvel comics that I used to read on a fairly regular basis was Star Wars. But head to the corner store and buy the Star Wars comic book. So that was always a lot of fun.
I jumped on with the Dark Horse the Star Wars comics. That's where I was kind of reading, was like, you know, when they did all the crazy stuff, like the Boba Fett stories, and you know, the introducing Mara Jade and all of those characters that they flushed down the toilet when Disney was like, "Hey, we're gonna restart everything." It was like, "Ah, oh, dang." But the first time I saw Star Wars in the movie theater was the special editions. Mm-hmm. I was in high school when they came out, and so I have like fond memories of going to the theater in the mall, because that's where it was, in the Lansdowne Mall, and going there with some buddies and a girl, and we went and saw that. So that was, I remember those, going to see those. And I mean, a lot of people like rag on them, but some stuff was just like, it was so neat to see like the expanded verse, right? Like in The Empire Strikes Back, when they're on Cloud City, and before, like when they're walking down the halls, it's just like orange windows. And then when they did the special editions, they actually had, like, you could see out the windows and you could see like the cloud cars and see the clouds and all that stuff. And I was like blown away. That was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I actually have, Walmart came out with a DVD box set, DVD editions. And it was a two discs per box. It was Empire Strikes Back. And there were two discs. The second disc was actually a copy of the original Laserdisc print. So it was as close you could get on disc to the original film. And it didn't have any of that special effects stuff. It was just the original film that I saw in 77. Mm-hmm. So I've held on to those discs for a long time, and every so often used to pop them in and stuff. And you had to like mess with the TV resolution, because it was like a little box in the middle, because it wasn't anamorphic. It wouldn't adjust automatically. That's how old this technology was on this disc. So you had to like zoom in on your TV and stuff. But recently, 10 years or so, somebody found a 35mm print that was actually used to broadcast the movie in a movie theater. Digitized the whole thing, and painstakingly updated, you know, high def it, cleaned up scratches, color correction, and stuff like this. And I have, I have a copy of that on my Plex server. And every so often we watch Star Wars in 4K, but the original version that I saw in theaters.
Yeah,
none of those digital enhancements. None of this, this Greedo nonsense.
Ah, Greedo, stupid Greedo. Stupid Greedo.
But I feel like Greedo Chris Gilpin can go on and on and on about the novels.
No, I read those religiously, and there were some great stories in there. Like they introduced some great characters.
Yes,
you know, and for them just to say, well, you know what, we're just going to pretend like this didn't happen and start over. It was brutal.
Yeah.
It was brutal. And now they're, you know, not a lot, but they're cherry picking the characters that they like, right? Thrawn.
Yeah.
He was part of that universe that they destroyed, but he's back.
Yeah.
Mara Jade. I mean, they've always talked about Mara Jade, but we haven't seen her yet, I don't think.
Yeah.
Not in the movies or anything, but.
Not yet. I've heard that she's going to be back, and because of that, her mini series, it like is the Emperor's Hand is like ridiculous. It just like super spiked.
Oh, really?
Went bananas like every other comic book where something's going to happen. But I don't know. Like, I mean, I really enjoyed all of that, and I was kind of annoyed when they kind of flushed it. And on the other hand, I was like, well, you know what? It kind of makes sense. They want to have their own stories. They want to do it right. They want to start. And then they gave us the last three movies. And I'm like, okay, you know, seven. Okay, it was good. It was kind of a nostalgic kick. It was like, hey, here's all the characters that you love. And, you know, a storyline that you're familiar with. Because pretty much it was episode four, right? It was just rebranded and updated. Yeah. And it was enjoyable. I enjoyed it. It was nice to get back into the characters. Picking a new director and taking it a new direction was not the right way to do it. And then the steaming pile that ended up being the last movie, like, it had good, like interesting and entertaining points to it. But overall that movie was just like, this is what we think of the Star Wars universe. And we're going to drop a big giant steaming pile of turd on it.
Yeah, because seven was just it had to be what it was just because of all the negativity of the prequels.
Yeah,
you know, you need a, it was JJ Abrams, right?
Yeah
Like JJ's like, basically, okay, I gotta do a love letter to all the Star Wars fans that are, you know, screaming and yelling that George Lucas raped their childhood with the prequels. Which is a little bit excessive if you ask me, but you know, there's a lot of people very, very angry about the prequels. Sam Peele to this day still insists that they don't exist. He's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. Jar what? Jar what? And so yeah, like seven was just episode like four. It was just Star Wars, just kind of same plot, same characterizations. They just put in different characters and try to expand it. So I get it.
Yeah.
You know, it was nice. It was fun. It was updated. But yeah, then the series just kind of loses steam. I mean, the Marvel Cinematic Universe works because there's a guy named Kevin Feige that is like directing this whole thing and steering this whole ship. And yeah, he's farming it out to various directors and writers and stuff, but he's there in the room, making sure it's all coherent. That was missing from the last three Star Wars movies. Just missing.
Yeah.
So it, you know, I mean, it was okay.
Now there's a whole generation out there that were raised on episode 1, 2, and 3. And for them, that's their Star Wars. And there's actually been kind of a resurgence of those movies where people are going back to them. And they're like, you know what? Maybe we're a little harsh on it. And they're finding the positives. Because again, I don't think it was all negative. And, you know, I think aside from George Lucas really just wanting to push toys, like by the time like Return of the Jedi came out, like it was a toy factory, right? Yeah. Like you said, Martin, it was like, I want this guy, I want that guy, I want this guy. Like there's like 27 Luke variants, right? You know, you got the Bespin Luke and you've got TIE Fighter Luke, and then you've got like, and you know, Jedi Luke, and
oh yeah,
you know, there's a character or a a figure for every mode and then some, right? So they were like, hey, there's no money in the movie. It's all in the toys. All in
the toys.
For sure. Yeah. And yeah. the way I look at it, right? Like, again, child of the first three movies. They're easily Star Wars is probably Empire Strikes. The movie I've seen the most in my entire life. I mean, I just watched it last week. And, you know, I was 8.
Yeah.
So is an 8-year-old watching the prequels as smitten with the prequels as I was with the original Star Wars? Probably. Yeah. There was a lot there for an 8-year-old. There was a lot of information. There's a lot of cool characters and scenes and stuff that maybe they didn't see. Me, you know, I was looking for a little bit of a more mature storyline, continuation of the thing. Maybe 8-year-old me would have loved the prequels as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. And, you know, those other 6 movies exist in this space. And like I said, it doesn't bother me because I'll just turn on Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
I'll just rewatch the original 3. Somebody else can enjoy the snot out of the other 6. I mean, I watched them, you know, they are what they are, but I've always got the originals. So I'm always going to be happy.
Yeah.
But there's one thing that the prequels have that I don't think any other ones had it is the backup from the TV shows, all the Clone War TV shows,
The animated ones, shows,
like the Bad Batch.
Yeah.
Bringing in Ahsoka Tano. What was it? Rebels. Yeah.
That's
Rebels,
a good one.
Right. So you watch those shows and like, maybe I should go back and watch the prequels again because they connect so much. Right. So,
yeah.
Star Wars, the original trilogy has the comic books. And we had a couple cartoons, Ewoks and droids, but
they weren't canon though.
Yeah.
Like not even close.
No. Yeah. No.
Like that's the one thing that did, you know, the animation side of things did kick off in a big way. Like you said, Star Wars Rebels, Star Wars Clone Wars, those were hugely successful cartoons. And like you said, a whole group of kids grew up watching those cartoons and loved those characters and stuff. So it's no coincidence that a Mr. Dave Filoni was involved with the cartoons. Yeah. And now he's involved with, you know, not the sole person, because there's a bunch of people working on it, but him and Jon Favreau and stuff doing The Mandalorian. And now they're doing the Book of Boba Fett. And it's like, you know, all of a sudden, like you said, here's this cartoon character of Ahsoka that as a kid you watched, you grew up with, you thought it was cool. And now they have, exactly like I was talking about with the prequels, a more mature, sophisticated version of that character continuing the storyline. And people are going nuts. Like The Mandalorian was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it was fantastic. Like, I seen a little meme there somewhere where it shows, you know, like J.J. Abrams and a couple of other guys and girls that were involved with the last 3 Star Wars movies going, you know, I can't please all the old fans and continue bringing in new fans. I got to do something. And then there's a picture of Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni filming Mandalorian saying, oh, yeah, hold my beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Mandalorian was just fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Boba Fett's good. I mean, it's a little slower, but they're also setting up character development, right? So I'm only 2 episodes in but I'm enjoying it. I was always curious to see how they got him out of the Sarlacc. I mean, there was at least 3 different versions in 3 different Boba Fett comics, like of how he got out of the Sarlacc. Thought it was very funny that it's almost word for word Oswald Patton's from Parks and Recreation.
Awesome.
I don't know if that was intentional or whether it was just like
it's got to be.
But I mean, like, it was pretty much word for word. So
like, if anybody doesn't remember that, the Parks and Rec TV show, they were doing a filibuster in the city council chambers, and it was Patton Oswalt, and the actor, he improvised the whole thing. None of it was written down. It came off of his head while he was standing at that podium, and he went into this big, huge thing on what he would have done after Return of the Jedi to expand the Star Wars universe. And like Chris says, his explanation was shot for shot. Like, he's like, and you see this gloved hand reach out of the sand and pull himself. And sure enough, in the Book of Boba Fett, there's Boba Fett's hand out through the sand, pulling himself out. It was like, thumbs up moment. Like, total fandom in such a love, such a great way right there.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Yeah. But I mean, as kids, we knew exactly how he got out. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a big deal. He's going to decay in the, what was it, 10,000 years to be digested? Means he had years. At least yeah. 2 days to get out of there with all of his weapons on his, you know, the shooting huge stuff. And, you know, there's no doubt we knew that he crawled up back up through the intestines and stuff. But it was kind of neat how he got oxygen from the stormtrooper armor.
Yeah.
That was kind of a neat little twist that I didn't expect.
Yeah.
But stuff like that, existed all along. Like, I have an insanely vivid memory. And back then, you know, we read, like, the original novelization written by Alan Dean Foster. It was actually based on early version of the script. So there's stuff in the novelization that isn't in the movie. Like, the whole Biggs Dark Lighter stuff that was cut, it was in there, that sort of stuff. And then we read books like Splinter of the Mind's Eye and stuff. And I'm positive, pre-internet, I knew that Darth Vader, like Anakin Skywalker, became Darth Vader in a volcano.
Yeah.
He fell in a volcano. I remember being a kid saying, you know, Darth Vader's Darth Vader because he fell in a volcano.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, we got the prequel movies, and he's on a lava planet, and he gets all burnt up in a river of lava. It's like, okay, either massive deja vu just happened here, or I saw this, heard of this somewhere along the way.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. I heard it that as well, where it was like, you know, he threw Obi-Wan threw Vader into a volcano after he killed Luke's dad. And I guess I'm really curious. I would have liked to have seen them maybe not take the one shortcut that they took that really bothers me the most. And that is making Leia, you know, Luke's sister. That was like, I mean, that was cheap. And then it was like, but what about all of the sexual tension they built up in the first movie between them? Like,
whole bunch of us were
George, you are wrong, man. Yeah, exactly. And then
were they raised in Kenmount? What's going on here?
George have a sister?
Exactly. What's that all about? But I mean, like, when George Lucas, he's explained this many, many times in various pieces of media. When he was coming up with the idea for the movie, he was literally, okay, I'm going to write this movie.
Yeah.
And then he's like, shoot, I got a lot here. I got enough here for three movies.
Yeah.
And then, while he was developing the character, and you guys are writers yourselves, so I'm not sure if you did this as well, but he's like, okay, I'm going to write a little bit of history so that you can figure out where these characters are going, you know, where they came from, sorry, and a little bit of after of where these guys were leaving. So in theory, he knew right from the get-go that it was going to be more than just one movie that then turned into three movies. There was always word that there was prequels and sequels coming.
Yeah.
So I've never read that script / treatment. It's out there somewhere. Maybe it says right in there that Darth Vader, you know, Obi-Wan killed Luke's dad and threw Darth Vader into a volcano. Maybe that was originally always part of the plot behind what was his name? Luke Starkiller?
Starkiller, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was the original name of the main character. And the Jedi was actually Han Solo, not Luke.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, there was words and rumblings about stuff like that. So
I think it was, I can't remember who published it, whether it was Dark Horse or whether it was Marvel, but something tells me it was Dark Horse. It was called The Star Wars.
Yes.
And basically it was an 8-issue series that was written on the original script.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very different, like, as to what ended up on the screen, like the characters and what happens and who's who, and it's very, very different. But I mean, and I get that sometimes when it comes down to the movie, they have to, you know, change and think on the fly. And as really from what I've heard, George's scripts really weren't all that hot. Now, I hope nobody like burns our this episode because I said that, But from what I've heard is his wife or his ex-wife now and a friend actually rewrote the entire thing. And actually, I think they edited it. Sorry, they didn't write it. They edited it. They edited his movie to actually make it make sense. And they actually won an Oscar for editing for the first movie, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, so like that, yeah. So that kind of goes to show you that, you know, like he gets all of the credit, but, it, you know, he had a lot of people in the background kind of helping him out.
Yeah. And that's the writing process, right? You know, you start with an original idea, you start fleshing it out, you change a few things, you add a few things, you know, it's a process. You know,
yeah, it's very possible. 400 times.
Yeah, that gets very possible.
Then you do it again.
Even the script for Return of the Jedi changed significantly from what he had in his mind when he finished the first film, fourth chapter, Star Wars.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So here's the question. I sort of vaguely recall, but at what point did they actually change the original crawl to change it to episode 4? Now, was it when they released it for home viewing, or was it actually still in the theaters when they changed it to episode 4? Because I know the actual original release didn't say episode 4.
It just said Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it was one of the special editions.
Okay, that was the first time.
I think I'll have to. I mean, we have the internet in front of us, we can look it up.
We got the old Dr. Google to help us out.
But I know that, like, even the last Blu-ray release of the film, he was still doing some tweaking.
Yeah. You know? Apparently, Disney's going to be doing some tweaking.
Like,
they're going back and they're going to re-edit Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi as well to try and make it fit with their TV shows and stuff that they're doing. They're going to try and make everything kind of fit in a timeline. And I've heard that, and I was like, I don't know, like, fix the one scene with Han Solo, please. Like, if you're gonna touch it at all, like, let Han shoot first. I get it, like, but they didn't want to make him seem like a bad guy, but he was a bad guy. He's a scoundrel. Let him shoot first, right?
So yeah, apparently, according to the internets here, the first movie came by and it just had Star Wars in the crawl. In 1980, Empire Strikes Back, instead of saying Star Wars 2, it was the first one that says Star Wars Episode 5,
okay.
Empire Strikes Back. So it was Empire Strikes Back that introduced that concept that this is the fifth chapter of a nine chapter, I don't know, what's that? Whatever the nine version of a trilogy is. Yeah, whatever the Latin version of nine is, I'm not sure. And
trilogy of trilogies.
Yeah, exactly. And when Star Wars was re-released in 1981, it had the title Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope.
Yeah.
So that was in 1981 when it was re-released in theaters.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to catch up on Star Wars after watching, you know, Empire Strikes Back, because they many times re-release the films in movies. Like, I remember watching Star Wars and Empire back to back in the movie theater just before Return of Jedi came out.
Okay.
You know, so and then on the 10th anniversary in 1987, they had a special version of Star Wars hit the theaters as well and stuff. So it was fairly soon, you know, like 1981, first movie came out in 77. That's 4 years. So within 4 years, they had officially started calling it A New Hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
according to the interwebs.
The cool thing with the Splinter of the Mind's Eye was that was actually supposed to be the second movie.
Yeah.
And Harrison Ford had expressed a lack of wanting to come back. So when they wrote it, there's no Han Solo in it. And that was kind of where that book came from. And like, I picked it up at a yard sale, I don't know, for a quarter or something at one point, and I read it and I was like, it's okay, but you know, it's lacking some stuff. Like, I kind of miss Han Solo. I like his suave, you know, I don't know why Harrison Ford hates to play him, but he's like, I everybody really liked Han Solo. Most people rooted for the guy.
Yeah. So it was based on story discussions that George Lucas had. So it is like you said, the idea was Harrison Ford was done with the trilogy. Harrison Ford was already talking to George about killing the character off for Return of the Jedi. mm-hmm. you know, and he's an actor. He had enough of this particular character and didn't see where he could take the character any further. Dude, it's an action film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At no point in time has Jean-Claude Van Damme ever said, I need to develop this character. You know, Rocky Balboa. Like, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. It's not art. It's entertainment. Relax. Have fun.
Maybe he just didn't like playing second fiddle.
Yeah.
He was a supporting role, not the role.
He wasn't supposed to be, but I mean, his popularity. In my Han Solo action figure was the first one to be chosen out of the action figure case every time we were picking to see who would play with who.
Yeah.
I'm a Han Solo guy all the way.
Well, that's what I mean. He was like such a popular character, and I'm not sure why he really hated him so much. I mean, like, the guy loves Indiana Jones so much, he's doing it again at like 80 whatever years old. He's like donning the hat and jumping around like an idiot. Loves that, but hates Han Solo, and I can't figure it out. I don't know.
Yeah. So just reading here a little tidbit, it says here that the book was written by Alan Dean Foster, again the guy who ghost wrote the first novelization, and it was based on story discussions with George Lucas, and it was written while Star Wars A New Hope was still in production.
Okay.
According to Starlog magazine, Foster's Star Wars contract allowed for Splinters of the Mind Eye to be filmed. The character is notably absent from the novel, as Harrison Ford had not yet been contracted for film sequels. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, it was intentionally written without Han Solo because they weren't sure they were going to get Harrison Ford back. And it's kind of like a James Bond film, Never Say Never Again. Mm-hmm. It's there, but it's not really there. So it sounds like that was the case. This was going to be like a spinoffy thing.
Yeah.
But I remember reading that book when it first came out. Like, I had it. I was nine or whatever when it came out. And I wasn't a great novel reader at the time, but I remember having it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got the comic series here somewhere. I should read it again.
The Kaiber crystal instead of the Kyber crystal. Mm-hmm. K-A-I-B-U-R-R crystal in the mind's eye. Got changed to being a Kyber crystal.
Oh, that's just because somebody spelled it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A force-focusing artifact mentioned in early drafts of Star Wars A New Hope. In the current Star Wars canon, Kyber crystals are the power source for lightsabers. There you go.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But as a writer, sometimes I know that you do spell something wrong, and then that becomes whatever happens next, right? Like,
character's name.
We're changing something. We either change his name altogether or we're... rewriting the whole thing. So I get that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, now you know, Disney. The moment that someone said Disney was buying Star Wars, I was like, okay, that dream I had when I was 12 that there would be a new Star Wars movie every 3 years, it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
There's just no way. Disney's gonna spend billions of dollars acquiring this license. There's no way the Disney marketing machine doesn't kick in.
Yeah.
Now, I had no idea at the time that this Disney Plus thing was going to
be. Yeah.
Like, wow. We're getting basically 10-hour Star Wars movies.
Oh, yeah. And regular fantastic. Basis. Like, fantastic movies. Like, the Solo movie was, okay, it was entertaining. But, you know, The Mandalorian, like, watch that over and over and over, right? Yeah. Like, it's just so good, and you know, it's so much fun, and you know, just everything about the TV shows is so much cooler than I was ever expecting them to possibly be, and I kind of enjoying them more than, say, you know, spending an hour and a half at the movie theater watching something that really doesn't ever need to be fully explained, like the Kessel Run. It was not really super important. It was, you know,
yeah
just whatever, but you know, they had to show it, I guess. But
the one thing that's fantastic with the TV shows is, just like the Marvel universe, there's tidbits in every single film calling back to other films and you know, being a little clairvoyant about what could happen in the future films. Like, there's always stuff. You watch a Marvel movie, and it's like, they talked about that four movies ago, and it's here.
Yeah.
You know, like, no spoilers to the Boba Fett TV show, because not everybody's caught up. But in the last one, it's just a teeny, teeny, tiny little cameo. So, you know, I don't think it's a spoiler. But they're in a Mos Espa, the Tatooine city of Mos Espa, and out past, like, just totally not related to the action that's happening, just a bystander walking by, is that little short lady with the little pit droids that was featured in Mandalorian, that was babysitting the baby and was running the little, whatever it is, fuel depot / landing center for the Slave One. Just not even her face. Just her and her pit droids out for a stroll as background characters, just real quick walking through the scene. And you're like,
yeah,
I missed that. Yeah. I have to go back and watch it now.
That's that thing. That's that thing that was in that thing. And it just excites you because it makes it for a coherent universe.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about stuff that excites you, the last like 5 minutes of the last Mandalorian episode when the X-Wing lands. And Luke Skywalker gets out, and basically it is the exact same scene as the Darth Vader scene from all of a sudden the names flip my mind.
Rogue One.
It's like literally the exact same scene where he's walking down the hall and he's like throwing the droids, slashing stuff, and it's like, oh, it's Luke. Yes. You know, like, as a Star Wars fan, like, Luke was always like, he was my guy, right? Like, I just loved watching Luke Skywalker. And, you know, because I guess it was maybe the Force and the lightsaber. And, you know, just that was always really exciting to me. And then when I saw it again, and now I've heard that they've got Sebastian Stan signing up to do it, I'm like, this is going to be amazing. Like, I'm so looking forward to seeing.
Is that actually official, or is it still a rumor?
Apparently part of it is rumor and part of it's actually official. So they're planning a Luke Skywalker show, and he hasn't officially signed on for that, but he has signed on to play Luke Skywalker in a couple of the, I don't know if it's in Mandalorian or something, but he signed on for a couple of episodes. So he's done some, but they're really hoping that he signs on for more. Well, I guess it depends on how busy he is, right?
That's just a natural. Like, when they start doing those memes of Sebastian Stan side by side with Luke Skywalker, young Luke Skywalker, it's like, you gotta put him in.
How do you not? He looks so much like him, it's ridiculous.
How do you not give the boy a call and say, hey, you want to film a few scenes? Like, I get the CGC work that they did, putting, you know, a younger Luke Skywalker on that Mandalorian scene. It should have just been Stan.
Yeah.
It just should have been Sebastian, because, you know, there's a couple of guys out there and gals that have done those deep fakes.
Yeah.
And they did a way better job of the CGI. Yeah. Granted, technology a couple of years later and stuff like this, but they should have just got Stan to do it. It just would have been fantastic.
Apparently, the reason that they didn't was they wanted to keep it a secret. And so, if they'd have hired him or even called him in, it would have not been a secret. So really, it was like super top secret bringing Luke into the final episode of The Mandalorian. Like, really, Grogu was the only, aside from Sokotana, the only Jedi that was, or Force user, I guess. I mean, everybody else was very normal. Like Rogue One. Rogue One was kind of cool in the aspect that there was, until Darth Vader showed up, there was like no Force users. It was just regular average Joes who were regular people / aliens who were dying for a cause, right? Like, they weren't super soldier guys. They were just regular people. And so I think that I really enjoyed that about it, because, like, you know, in the prequels, Jedi were everywhere, right? Like, how many of these guys were there? There was like Jedi falling out of the sky, right? But by the time you get to episode 4, 5, and 6, you know, the Jedi are all but extinct, right? You know, and so it's like, well, what the heck happened?
No, I absolutely adored Rogue One. I thought it was great, because it was it was a continuing. It was very much like the novels that Chris Gilpin and I like. It was a continuation of the story, but it wasn't involving the main characters, but it still fit, you know, and I thought it was good. I really enjoyed Rogue One. Like I said, the Solo movie, I can't put my finger on exactly what part I didn't dig, but there was something there that wasn't the best.
Like, I watched it and I enjoyed it. We went to the theater and saw it. It was fun, but I've never watched it again. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen Rogue One, I don't know, probably a handful of times since it came out. So I don't mind going back to that one, but the Solo movie is not, like, one that keeps drawing me back in, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, those books could have been way better sequels than the ones they made. I like the ones they made, but there's just too many stories.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce the name of the alien species they were fighting when the universe wrapped up.
The next chapter, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. These guys, they were all about being natural. Like, their armor were shells from creatures and their staffs were creatures. And
was that Zizor?
Something like that. They're the ones that drop on Chewbacca, I think.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah,
Chewie gets a planet dropped on him.
Spoiler alert if you haven't read the books. Blah, 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 dies.
Yeah, but it was great because I can't remember which one it was, but one of the Jedi takes a swing at this alien guy and he holds up his staff that is some kind of creature and it blocks the saber.
Yeah.
Like, the saber just doesn't cut right through it. It actually blocks it. And like, uh-oh. You're real now.
Yeah.
They were great stories.
Yeah.
Great characters, too.
Yes. No, I really enjoyed them. I keep wanting to call him Robert Jordan, but it's not. I can't remember what it was. He wrote the first books with Thrawn in them.
He's on? Is that him?
Zahn. Timothy Zahn, yeah. He had his own little trilogy there. And, of course, the names all have slipped my mind at this point. But that was a really fun series. Like, they had, like, the clone Jedi, the old guy, and he was, like, had gone insane, which is why they stopped cloning Jedi, because they were... the force would like make them go bananas, and you know, so he's like this old guy on the planet who's half insane. He's running around trying to like teach Luke how to do stuff and chop him up and stuff. It was kind of fun, but they were like, I really enjoyed those books. At one point I must have had 30 of them, you know, like everything right from Splinter of the Mind's Eye right up into the Timothy Zahn stuff. And then I even had some of the new stuff that took place just after episode 3, you know, like in between like the Purge and stuff. I had some of those novelizations too, and it was just I don't read nearly as much as I used to. I really should get back in it, but
yeah. For me, I've always been just an absolute fanatic for X-Wing history and pilots and stuff. Wedge Antilles is like one of my set of favorite characters in the Star Wars universe. The only person to be in all three movies that wasn't a main character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the few X-Wing pilots that survived the Death Star battle. Mm-hmm. But so the X-Wing books were just fantastic. Like, this, I love the series. I think is there 8 or 9 of these, Chris?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think there's 9, I think, because it's like a trilogy of trilogies. I
absolutely adored it. Like, every single part of the series was fantastic. And when they said on Disney Plus that there's like an X-Wing, I can't remember whether is it the TV series instead of a movie?
I think so.
Coming out?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, Martin got a little excited. It was good. Now, I was on a Facebook forum where we were kind of discussing this. And I think what happened was it was a multimedia thing, an incentive sort of campaign by LucasArts. But that very first Timothy Zahn book came out the same year earlier, but the same year that Dark Horse relaunched the comics.
Oh, okay.
You know, so there was a bit of a discussion there. Did the comics launch the books? Did the books launch comics? And actually, chronologically, the book came first And it takes like what, 2, 3, 4 years to write a book?
Yeah.
You know, maybe Timothy Zahn's a savant and he can do it in 6 months, but, and comic books are usually a 3-month process, right? 3 or 4 months, 5 months. So for sure the book was conceived of and done first, but I think the popularity of the book, because it blew up, it was New York Times bestseller list and everything. Mm-hmm. I don't think it caused the Dark Horse contract, but I think it sure as heck helped get that going and getting the popularity going. And then all the comic book readers dug into it. Like some of those Dark Horse books are worth quite a few dollars because they are hugely popular.
But every time they introduce a new character that might be possibly in the next movie, the book skyrockets. Like the book that was titled The Last Jedi was like, oh my goodness, that was like, it went from a 50-cent book overnight to like, you know, $150. Like it exploded. I was like, what? It has absolutely nothing to do with the movie except the stinking title, and people are like snatching this thing up like it's like the secret plot to the movie.
Well, the same thing happens with comics, right? If they're going to make that comic book character movie, it goes from, you said, like 50-cent comic book to $100.
Yeah.
Like, what is that? Is it Darth Vader number 2 or 3 that has Dr. Aphra?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's going to be in a TV. Listen, guys, girls, learn from Outcast. Just because it's going to be a movie or a TV show doesn't make the book a $500 book.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Just before we went on air here, Chris posted a Star Wars comic book, which is the first comic book appearance of Boba Fett. And because it's a Canadian price variant at 9.8, they want $9,000 for it. And so I was like, I don't know whether to laugh or cry. Like, is this like really serious? Like, are you serious? You want $9,000 for this book? Like, I get it, it's a 9.8, it's a Canadian price variant if that tickles your fancy, but like $9,000 for a comic book that probably has, I don't know, aside from the Canadian price variant, like 100,000 books out there.
Yeah.
Like, holy frig,
if somebody gave me $9,000 to buy one comic, that wouldn't be it,
right?
exactly.
I'm a firm believer that you can ask whatever you want, and if you get it, all the power to you. But yeah, no.
So somebody's gonna buy it.
All the comments were very supportive. Like, usually get people laughing sometimes if somebody's overpriced, but all the comments were pretty supportive of them. So
yeah.
Well, we'll see if it sells for that price or not. But I just can't imagine.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine. But I mean, Star Wars comics have like skyrocketed in price. Skyrocketed. Yeah. I remember when I was selling comic books out at the barn, I had a Star Wars number one that sat there forever and ever. I think I had a $60 price tag on it. Sat there forever. Nobody bought it. Other comics are coming and going. Finally, somebody picked it up for $60. I was so happy to liquidate that copy. I was just like, thank you. 3 months later, $350 comic. Somebody was obviously reading the forums on Facebook and stuff before I was and realized what it was, but
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm trying to complete my Star Wars run from Marvel still. Those are one of the series that I didn't liquidate when I sold some books. I can't pay $45 an issue.
I'm missing 3 issues near the end.
Yeah.
Like, I remember all those Star Wars books being in the dollar bin. There, I just cannot bring myself to spend $45 for a Star Wars comic.
Yeah. No, I hear you. It's crazy. And then it's only going to get worse. Like, even if you wanted to get like the Dark Horse stuff now, some of that stuff is ridiculous too. Like, anything circulating Star Wars is just kind of exploding right now. And it's like friggin' expensive. I don't know why, but.
Yeah. Well, I've seen a couple of theories on that. Somebody was talking about how, you know, there's a lot of money laundering going on. Because what was that Mike Zeck very first original art page that Spider-Man's in his black outfit just sold for $3 million+ for a piece of original art. Wow. And it's like, so they're like, you know, oh, there's some laundering and stuff. It's like, it's not that hard. COVID. So nobody's doing anything. So there's a bunch of nerds out there with a lot of extra cash. Bitcoin went through the darn roof, and who but a computer nerd, comic book, Star Wars fanatic, you know, bought four Bitcoin when they were 13 cents each, and now they're, you know, $36,000 each. So there's a populace out there that are buying, you know, they're looking at this huge amount of money that they can turn around and turn into a physical asset should Bitcoin collapse or something like that. So there's some theory there that maybe that's what's causing some of this run on some of this big huge stuff. You got $3 million in Bitcoin and it was worth 13 cents 10 years ago or 5 years ago, it makes sense to buy Action Comics number one. You know, turn it into a physical asset that you can then do something with, you know. So is that why? Is it because people have a little bit more disposable income because of COVID? Is it the movies? You know, is it other people out there seeing things like Batman number one and Avengers number one selling for huge dollars? So now all of a sudden it's an investment. I don't know shit about comic books, but I know Action Comics number one was $1 million. Then the next time it sold, it was $1.5 million. Next time it sold, it was $2 million. So if I buy a copy for $3 million, I'm sure I'm going to be able to sell it for $5 million next year. You know, is that what's going on?
It could be. I've noticed a huge spike in Bronze Age stuff recently too, just from like what people are popping, even like Wolverine number one up for, like, you know, even in mint condition, it was like a $20 book. And now people are asking like $80 for it. Like it's, and it's just for his regular series. It's not like it's a first appearance of anything. And there's nothing special about it. It's just, it's a number one from the Bronze Age. And, you know, it's just stuff like that's getting real expensive. And it makes you go, like, maybe my books aren't worth nothing after all.
Yeah. Like some people can't afford Incredible Hulk 181. So they're like, okay, well, I'll get Incredible Hulk 180 instead.
Yeah.
And that just drives up demand for Hulk 180. And now all of a sudden, like, I bought my Hulk 180, I don't know, $25 when 181 was well into the thousands.
Yeah.
Way up there, way out of reach. And now it's $1,000 book.
Yeah.
180. So it's like, just get that sucker graded, slabbed, and off it goes.
Yeah, I need to do that.
You know, so is what it is. Well, we got about 3 minutes left. Did we miss anything on the Star Wars? Anything anybody want to cover before we...
Yeah, I have a question for you guys, because I'm probably the only person in the world that likes the character. But why is all the hate for Jar Jar?
He's just too goofy.
Yeah,
he's comic relief, but over the top comic relief. Like,
yeah,
they toned it down in the later sequel movies, but in the first sequel movie, like, it was all the goofy accents from the Trade Federation, Jar Jar doing all his, you know, and when you're looking for that more mature thing that I was referring to, what is this? But an 8-year-old, you know, this is way cooler than R2-D2 and C-3PO. This is like a really, really flipping cool Jawa. This is amazing. I love Jar Jar. He's funny. He's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, pratfalls and stuff like this. So I think it was just expectation. I think if you just saw the prequels, there wouldn't be so much hatred against Jar Jar. But he's just, you know, it's tomfoolery in the middle of a serious science fiction film that I'm very serious about.
Yeah.
You know.
Not to mention the fact that wasn't he the reason that Palpatine got in charge of everything?
Yeah.
Because
he did the vote.
The vote or something?
Yeah, but that was in later bits of the sequel.
Yeah. Well, that's why they say he's a Sith, but...
Yeah. That would have been cool if that came out.
But I'm sure it was a little bit of negativity towards Jar Jar earlier on than the second and third prequel movies.
Yeah. And I think people were upset about the accent too, because he has like the heavy Jamaican accent. And then like, and I don't know, I haven't heard an interview with Ahmed Best. I don't know if that's how he talks. Like, he very well could have a very thick accent, so he wasn't acting. You know, that's just his voice, right? That's who they picked. Maybe he speaks a little higher in the movie. I couldn't tell you for sure. But I think people were kind of offended by that. And, you know, there was a certain level of, like, you know, what are you selling here, right?
So it's a well-known fact that everybody in the Star Wars universe has a British accent.
Yeah.
What are we doing with all these other crazy accents?
It was like the nuts? Trade Federation, right? The Trade Federation had a very...
The Trade Federation was a little... That was a little bad.
Yeah, I'm not sure what accent that was. And I know people were upset with Watto too, because he has what they consider to be like a Jewish accent, right? And I mean, I'm just going from what I heard. I never considered that when I was listening to Watto. And so I think there, I don't know whether people are just looking to get butthurt anymore, but that seems to be like, you know, what people were kind of aiming for. And I was like, the Watto thing, I didn't really get, but I kind of could see where, you know, like, because at that point there was like hardly Lando, I think, was the first black guy in Star Wars at all, right?
Yeah.
And you know, so then their next representation is Jar Jar, and I think people were upset.
Well, I think it's obvious that George Lucas was divorced when he did the prequels, because his wife wasn't there to give him a hand.
To save his life. Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have, everybody. Hope you had a good time. Tune in to our show at heykidscomics.ca. Check us out on YouTube. All the links are there. And, of course, all the podcasting, wherever we are. And we'll see you all next week.
See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like the Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?
Level check for CFFF promo, take 3.
Testing 1, 2, 3. Good level?
Yep.
Bobby Bittman here. I always listen to Trent Radio 92.7. I love this guy, I really do.
You do one more of those?
Sure. What was wrong with that one?
Nothing. The level was a little high.
Okay. Hi, this is Bobby Bittman. When I'm in the Kawarthas, I listen to Trent Radio 92.7 FM.